Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We continue our draft countdown series today. Today, looking at the inside linebackers. We're recording in the middle of the night because that's the way it always works with this guy. But Josh Reed joins me from Alaska. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. It's only 10 o'clock my time, but I know you're burning midnight oil at 2 a.m.
There you go. So, you know, after we've had our little production meeting, a little talk about family and whatnot, we're off and rolling, and we'll be done sometime after 4 a.m. if past shows are any indication between you and me. But let's start. Go through it quickly, kind of what the Ravens' situation is at inside linebacker. Certainly has changed a lot from last year, with the exception of Roquan Smith, who remains the leader of the defense. And certainly the linebackers, but that weak side linebacker role is wide open.
Yeah, you know, their succession plan of having Trenton Simpson kind of slot into that Patrick Queen role didn't exactly go as they planned to. They gave him a pretty long leash. I mean, he took all the first team reps throughout the summer, throughout training camp. He even played deep into like preseason games in like quarter three. I think he played in Q4 in one of those games. I think they maybe had him come back inside because somebody else got hurt. But anyways, they let him start like the first, 13 games up until the Eagles game. And so they gave him a pretty long leash. And it just I could have swore on Pro Football Reference they had him as
I'm not disagreeing with you. Please go ahead.
I was just saying. But yes, I gave him a pretty long leash. Now his playing time started to diminish prior to, you know, the bye week in the Eagles game. But he was the first guy up in a lot of those games. Like when they usually chart their starts and all that, they usually have him like who was the first guy on the field when they took the field. But yeah, he was year two for Trenton Simpson. Didn't exactly go as the Ravens had planned, or anybody really had planned. After that tantalizing, you know, preview we got of him in the season finale in 2023 as a rookie, we all thought that it was just going to be, you know, like sliding and replace, and wasn't quite that. And, you know, inside linebacker is one of those positions, man, where you kind of see it now in the league where it's one of those harder to transition from college to the pro games. And Trenton Simpson was no exception to that last year.
All right. And, of course, Harrison and Board took a substantial portion of the snaps. We're playing early downs. And Harrison was playing a combination of edge and weak side linebacker. Board was playing it mostly on passing downs. Board was in there some on run downs when Harrison was needed on the edge as well. So they were really not playing Simpson towards the end of the year. And Simpson was in there only for some mop-up duty. And it changed the progression of his play changed early on from playing all three downs to being taken out for the dime back role. I think that might've been as early as week three or four. Week three or four, maybe, where they went to the dime and they were very successful with it. And that was one of the things that really, you didn't realize how successful the dime was until maybe later in the season when they got the safeties. You know, the safeties were the problem and not the linebackers in terms of coverage early in the season. And Borden Harrison are big losses. I mean, that's 800 special team snaps that are lost with the two of those guys. And then in addition, it is a fairly minor loss, but Christian Welch lost to the Packers is another special teams guy who could have been the backfill for, say, either Harrison or Board, maybe not as good as either, but at least a guy who can come in, play special teams and be a backup linebacker. He's gone. They brought in Jake Hummel to play as an inside linebacker who plays primarily special teams. And I assume he's going to take over a kind of a captain role on the special teams. He certainly is one of the guys who is in line to do it, along with players like Tylan Wallace and maybe some others. So I think the Ravens are in a position, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, where they probably draft an inside linebacker and they also bring in one or two undrafted guys they like. First of all, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, but I also think it's a pretty thin draft class.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely lockstep in that. I was really surprised they weren't able to bring back any of the three guys, whether it's Welch, Board, or Harrison. I was surprised by the sizable deals that all three of those guys got. Even a guy like Board, they got like what, $3 million a year from the Giants. So just the value that other teams are placing on some of the Ravens, you know, like role players or other guys, was a little bit surprising to me. And like, you know, Welch was sitting out there for so long, I just figured he might, you know, get brought back. And then he got picked up. He's going back to the Packers because he was with them last training camp. So yeah, man, that kind of surprised me. And I like I said, just losing those two veterans, just not just from a special teams value, but like for what they meant for that defense down the stretch, definitely hurts. Just as far as like those kind of Josh Bynes-ish contingency plans for when a young guy wasn't really, you know, quite up to snuff. And as far as this draft class, yeah, man, it's definitely not robust. I'd say there's definitely some intriguing players and a lot of talented athletes, but not guys who you could come in and just slot right away into that weak side linebacker role.
And not a lot of great, and we're looking at the mics obviously today, not just the weak side linebacker, although my list is generated in terms of who makes the most sense for the Ravens. I actually think the Ravens need a combination at both spots. They need a two-down thumper at Mike. Now, they might be able to get that off the street when the time comes, because they've made phone calls to Josh Bynes on multiple occasions to do just that. It won't be Josh Bynes this time around, but it might be somebody else whose Bynes-esque qualities allows him to play two downs. But they if anything were to happen to Roquan, they really need a guy to step in at the mic. I don't think Simpson is that guy for two down play anyway. You could have him there on third down maybe if you're satisfied with his coverage, but I don't think for two down play he's the guy. So they go to the street, or they find that guy now and they have him be a special teams ace / mic backup. And that's what Delshon Phillips was for the Ravens. So
yeah, you know, Delshon just signed elsewhere too. I think he signed him to the Texans or somebody recently.
Oh, okay. I actually didn't know that, but his time may have passed, but he'd be a guy that I wouldn't be bad at all bringing back, you know, where it is. I think some of the money that's being thrown at these backup inside linebackers is probably a reaction to the weak draft class, that people know there's just not a lot of talent out there. And, you know, it's very, juxtaposed. I'm working on the interior defensive linemen. I actually did this a few days ago, but the interior defensive line group is so thick with talent. There could be 12, 13, 14, 15 guys on the first 2 days of the draft that are taken. And, you know, we've been through some really lean years on the defensive line with the COVID and post-COVID years, really thinning the group at defensive line. But this year is it's a big, big group. All right, couple things. Harbaugh mentioned Simpson would be the two-down will linebacker, which means they're looking really at getting back to playing more dime. I think he's actually being truthful with that. It may be there's another way that they would scheme in to have a board-esque weak side linebacker who's going to be in there on third down. But I think from cap perspective and from, you know, the value you get from having a dime back on the field on third down, I think it just makes a lot more sense. I think also the Ravens have those versatile players, primarily in this case, it's Hamilton who can move into that dime role.
Yeah. Yeah. They like, I mean, Zach Orr's even said it this offseason, they like playing with multiple defensive backs. And I think that's definitely the way to go. And that's the way that some of the modern NFL is kind of trending. You know, there for so many years, you had those high on a hybrid strong safety, linebacker guys that, you know, but now those guys are kind of just playing defensive back primarily and just kind of playing in the box. So I at this point, instead of trying to force a square peg into a round hole with the linebacker thing, just play more DBs.
Yep. I'm with you entirely. And we've also seen, I think, kind of a shift away from the smaller ILB group. And this year's class is a lot bigger size-wise than the average guy is probably 5 pounds heavier across the board than his person at the same rank on the list in past years. So we're seeing bigger players. Not that there aren't a couple of smaller guys, but we're past the year like the Patrick Queen draft. There are a lot of small linebackers in that draft. They got drafted really high too. So
a lot of sub 240 guys.
Yeah. Oh, I there were guys in the 220s in the Patrick.
Yeah, 229, 229.
Yeah, we're seeing like 232, 235, 231. Those are kind of the weights we're seeing on inside linebackers today. And I some would even say that's a little small. I don't, but I think, you know, 230 to 240 is the range you're looking for. If you can get 245, like Campbell, the Detroit linebacker, was in that range. Jack Campbell, mm-hmm. Jack Campbell, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's not delay any further. Let's go ahead and start it off with your number 10 guy. And tell us first, though, how you constructed your list. Is your list really for the Ravens, or is this overall how you see the talent of these guys?
I mean, yeah, more so through the Ravens lens. Like, I always kind of like picture the kind of role these guys would play with the Ravens. Then not so much, oh, this is my 18th ranked linebacker or whatever. It's kind of like, how will this guy fit the Ravens? And, you know, then it's come to kind of illuminate some of his better qualities and some of his not so good qualities. And kind of, I always kind of look through things through Ravens lens because that's how I write. So it's kind of through a Ravens lens.
All right. Outstanding. Who's your number 10 guy?
Okay, so my number 10 guy, I pull up my list here. It is Kane, how do you say his last name? Medrano from UCLA. So he's a guy, he's a converted safety, tested really well at the combine, ran the fastest 40 among linebackers, kind of little, you know, he's a little bit on the slider side. But yeah, just tested off the charts, you know, look good going through coverage drills. And then I think he's a guy that could, you know, like if he shows the ability, play that kind of dime linebacker role. He's a little bit on the slider side. And you really like those converted safety guys because they're usually kind of more naturally fluid in their hips as far as dropping back in coverage. So he's a guy that could be covering tight ends not out of the backfield, but, you know, off the line of scrimmage. And he's a bit older guy, 6 year senior, with team captain. You know, typical, you know, I wouldn't say typical Ravens guy, but they like high character guys, experienced guys. He brings a lot of volume on special teams as well. So he could kind of help fill one of those special teams roles that Harbaugh was talking about at the owner's meeting.
Okay, he's off my list. Age is a good reason. I really was very tough on the guys who are older in this draft, and particularly inside linebacker, if you want to get a second contract out of them. That's, I think, a logical reason. So I didn't go in depth on him, but I'll say this: the class is so weak, and you're so likely to get guys who are 6'7" UDFA guys, where it's even close to the line. These guys, you could slip through to the practice squad. They're guys, you know, you might be able to pick up without even a draft pick, and those guys are, you know, already taking up the 8, 9, 10 spots on my board for the Ravens. is like the that it's reasonable to look at a guy like him and say, yeah, I like him for the Ravens, because there's you know, he might be a UDFA, but he's a guy that the Ravens can potentially use. But older player like that, immediately my jaundiced eye goes on in terms of what else is wrong and how is he playing with his grown man strength when everybody else was still a little boy there, I guess.
Yeah, I figured I know how you feel about the age thing. That's why a guy like Jack Kaiser was on my honorable mentions, because I would need mm-hmm. I mean, that dude, he literally played Kyle Hamilton's entire career at Notre Dame. Both those guys played together from 2019 to 2021, and then he stayed another 3 years. So a guy like Jack Kaiser didn't make my list, but I thought I'd throw him in honorable mentions just because I know it would get a rise out of you.
Oh, okay. Kaiser's actually on my list, so we'll get
really?
To him a little later.
I
hate giving that away. But no, I got other guys. It's just there's everybody in this inside linebacker class has so many warts that, you know, after you get past the top guy, who I'm sure we agree on, everybody has warts. And another guy who I evaluated with the edges, Jalen Walker, is not on my list. I evaluated him with the edges. I don't know if he's on yours.
No, he's not.
Okay. So, but anyway, if you go through the rest of these, we'll just go through them. I don't want to spoil the whole show on this and talk about, you know, why I constructed the whole list this way. Next guy, my number 10 guy is Danny Stutzman of Oklahoma, 6'3", 233, a 450, 240. He just turned 22 in March, so he is age appropriate for an NFL start to his career. He's got average testing across the board, other than that elite 40, the second team All-American in 2023, consensus All-American in 2024, defensive captain at Oklahoma, special teams player. And then there are some problems, because all that sounds pretty damn good, and he could be a lot higher, maybe on your board, Josh, but his coverage metrics are not good. 8.3 yards per target and 114.7 opposition passer rating. By the way, you're going to hear these stats for every lineman or every linebacker from me, and I'm going to be comparing them, telling you where they kind of rank among the entire class of what I consider to be draftable inside linebackers. The other one is stops to missed tackle ratio. Now, I think you did the linebackers last year, or I know you've done them in the past at some point. You might have done edge last year.
Yeah, for the draft show, I can't remember that. I think I might have been something like that.
The Jared Verse draft, you were definitely the edge guy, I thought. But anyway, the stops to missed tackle ratio was 3.7 to 1, which is okay, but it's not really good for an inside linebacker. He had 55 stops. That's good. 15 missed tackles, which is bad. So it's good to have so many stops that you can make up for a bad missed tackle number like that. He has much more speed than you would expect at 233 pounds. He pretty much is almost Patrick Queen speed, and he's carrying an extra, 11 pounds, 10 pounds, whatever it might be, over what Queen was running at. His number is untainted because it was measured at the combine. A whole lot of other, the inside linebackers in particular, have an other timing on their 40, which immediately brings the whole thing into question. Pro day is bad enough, but if you have an other timing on that, it might have been years ago when you weighed less. It might have been, it could be a lot of reasons where you got it, but jaundiced eye is the appropriate term. There's a lot to learn in coverage, whether it's zone or man. Most important, we'll be gaining an understanding of that level 2 and level 3 gap, how deep he needs to drop, where his responsibility ends and the safeties begins in terms of those pass offs. And that's a very tough thing for linebackers to understand. It's also very tough for linebackers to understand what's going on behind them by eyeing up the routes that are going to be run across the line of scrimmage as they go. And in particular, when the other team is five wide, that linebacker is usually getting picked off or at a bunch. That linebacker is often getting picked on, and he really needs to understand how those routes fit together, not just where his most likely coverage assignment is going to come from, and kind of focus on that. Because there's going to be a guy dragging in behind his zone who will take advantage of that. And that's where that level 2, level 3 understanding really needs to be at a high level. Stutzman is a beast in the run game. I thought his missed tackle rate's high for a draftable linebacker, but he shoots gaps well, and that's where he gets a lot of his stops. So I was very positive on that. His defensive wins per game at 4.58 is a massive number. That is very hard number for a linebacker to achieve, and that's one of the reasons why that 55 stops is very impressive. did not see a high volume of pass rush opportunities, mostly a guy who drops to cover. He also was not particularly effective when he was sent on the pass rush. If you want a lower cost, pure two down thumper, I think Stutzman is probably your guy. Mike or Will, he'd be a good Mike two down backup for Roquan and special teams player if that's what you want him for. And he'd be a good potential Will backup or even competition for Simpson if that's what you want him for as well. So what else I want to say about him? He's played five units of special teams in college. He's got over 400 college special team snaps. That doesn't always happen, by the way. With starting linebackers, they usually want to keep them out of special teams role. But Stutzman, maybe even at his own request, really wanted to be on special teams and kind of maybe showcase himself for an NFL team.
Yeah, for some of the interviews that I've seen him do, he's just kind of one of the guys that never wants to come off the field, you know, once guard is on his shield kind of guys. So I had Stutzman a little higher, like you alluded to a little earlier. I did had some of the same notes as you did, just some limitations in coverage, but you know, it has some natural feel to for the position. Otherwise, as far as playing the run and you know blowing things up and limiting plays in the run game. So I wrote that his stack shed could use some work, but he does a good job of kind of knowing where the ball is going, especially when playing the run and things behind the line of scrimmage. When he broke out in 2022, he just didn't continue to develop as far as his pass coverage skills. You know, he had one interception over the past 2 years and three pass breakups. Both of those came in 2023, none last year. So I mean, his tackle numbers are still over 100 plus both years. But like you said, I think he has a future as an early down defender and key special teams contributor for the Ravens. Definitely could compete with Trenton Simpson from day one if he were to be drafted by the Ravens.
Okay, you had him number seven, did you say?
Six. I had him six.
Six. Okay, wow. Okay. Who is your number nine guy then? We'll move on.
My number nine guy. So I was waffling on whether to have this guy or his teammate on at this spot, but I went with Colin Oliver from Oklahoma State. He's a guy that played edge and off the ball for the Cowboys, and he's a guy that I just kind of saw as playing potentially a similar role as like you know early career Calvin Ole or most recently Zach Bond, even like a Tyus Bowser kind of type, somebody who could play off the ball and off the edge, that kind of positional versatility I know the Ravens really like. He's one of the guys. So he came into college as an edge rusher and had like 11 and a half sacks his freshman year. Was like Big 12 defensive freshman of the year. But he's one of those guys. He played defensive end his first 2 years in college and then alpha wall linebacker the last two. He missed some time last year with a foot injury. But he's a guy that you know showed some ability in coverage. He's a little bit undersized for an edge, which means he could, at least in my eyes and a lot of people I respect in the industry kind of project this too. Is a lot of times with some of those undersized edge guys who show some ability, could kind of project in the ability to play both positions, project better as off-ball linebackers at the next level. That's how I kind of view Colin Oliver. So he's a guy that I think would be a good early down Will and even later down Sam for the Ravens.
Okay, that's an interesting one. Oliver is clearly with the edges for me. That's where a lot of his success has been. So also, you know, when you project a player to the next level, even if the guy has some off-ball and on-ball experience, and the example from Ravens history is Peter Boulware. Started in the league as an off-ball linebacker, but on third downs, even early in his career, he would line up with his hand in the dirt to rush off the edge. And in fact, in 2001, when the Ravens had an injury at defensive end, I forget if it was McCrary or Burnett, but one of the two of them went down, and Peter Boulware just immediately moved into a full-time defensive end role in the Ravens 4-3 at the time and led the AFC in sacks. Oliver, he'll play edge as a situational pass rusher in the NFL, at least to start. I really don't see him as being an off-ball linebacker. I don't think he's a good enough run defender to do it, but I would evaluate him with the edges. So I good football player, no doubt about it. Will be a hell of a pass rusher, I think, in the NFL. I just don't see him as being able to adapt to the run game.
Yeah. So I was the waffling between putting him or his teammate Nick Martin on here at this spot, but I just for the Ravens through the Ravens lens, the versatility that he brings, Oliver does as far as playing both experience playing off the ball and on the ball. I was like, and I mean, I kind of like Martin, but then you know also like Oliver, and so I kind of went with Oliver in this case. But Nick Martin was one of my honorable mention guys too.
You know, Oliver, if he were to be drafted by the Ravens, first of all, I wouldn't be disappointed by it at all, but he clearly would be in the edge group. And I'll tell you why. It's because that's where their need is. You know, and also his off-ball background probably is something where, and he's got how many? He had 217 coverage snaps in 2023. And he wasn't bad at it at all. I mean, he could be a Sam linebacker for the Ravens potentially. But I mean, his future, I think, is standing at the line of scrimmage. It's not in a 3-4 defense. I don't think it's, or as possibly with his hand in the dirt on third down. But he's a guy, you know, I just don't really see his future off ball.
Yeah, he's kind of remind me of Tyus Bowser a little bit, because like I remember when the Ravens took him out of Houston, yeah. I was okay, this guy's gonna be playing off the edge, and then his rookie year he's playing mostly off the ball in coverage. So I saw him in like a similar vein, and it just I like the positional versatile guys, and like you said, this class is kind of thin as far as inside linebackers go. So I was like, you know, I'd rather have a guy who's more versatile and can bring more to the table than just, you know, throwing another guy up there for shits and giggles.
It is very hard to find like guys you can really project who have a pass rush background to a Sam role. But I mean, the tape is all there for him. There's enough evidence already out there that this guy can play Sam. A lot of the guys, they're too good as pass rushers for the team to sacrifice them into coverage. And they're not looking for the same kind of flexibility out of these guys who are only there for one more year kind of thing anyway. But in terms of the guys who could drop the coverage, you usually have to project that based on, you know, traits and other things, and not based on what they've actually done in college, because they may have done it, you know, 8 times or 15 times in a year in their college careers. All right, let's move on. I'll move on to my number 9 guy. That's Cody Lindenberg of Minnesota. All right, let me get down to my notes on him, make sure I've got this together. 6'2", 236, a 4.71 40 at his pro day. I don't have any age on him, but he spent 5 seasons in Minnesota, so he's probably 23, maybe approaching 24. That definitely dragged him down. His average testing everywhere, except he has a really good vert and a good 3 cone at 7.01. That's a very nice thing to have your inside linebacker have. Injuries have caused him to miss some time in 2 of the last 4 seasons. That's definitely a flag. Coverage metrics are pretty good, 7.4 yards per target, 85.8 opposition passer rating. Career, very similar, 7.0 yards per target, 89.5. He's got 774 coverage snaps in his career, so it's not a small sample size in terms of what he's had to do as an inside linebacker. Stops to miss tackle ratio is where he falls down a little bit at 2.8, 39, and 14 this last year. Career missed tackle rate is 17.2%. with his best coming at 13.2% in his final season. So he is an older guy, and to have a high missed tackle rate in a season where you're older is not a good thing. You should be more technically proficient. You should also be stronger, and you'd hope they wouldn't come up with that. But he's a big-time on-field leader. You see him being the guy who makes the most adjustments, certainly at level 2 and level 1 of that Minnesota defense. He's always pointing people around. As a weak side linebacker, I think he would have to accomplish more with reads and instincts than just chasing to sideline to sideline, where his speed is just not exceptional for the position. So he'd be why am I saying that? The weak side linebacker spot is kind of a natural run and chase position. And chase, yep. You oftentimes are following the instincts of your Mike linebacker. And very fortunately, the Ravens have Roquan, who has outstanding instincts and really helped Patrick Queen be a better player while he was here. But you got to be able to run in that weak side spot. And so Lindenberg really more fits the backup Mike two down thumper role, with also a special teams, big slug of special team snaps, it would have to be. I think that's all he would do in 2025. I don't see him getting on the field much in any other way. I don't see him beating out Trenton Simpson for playing time. But, you know, he's a guy who could be an emergency inside linebacker, and he could develop into even a three-down inside linebacker, I think, possibly, based on how good his coverage has been in the future. But I don't see that in 25. Special teams only for 25. And I would have him, by the way, just to give you an idea, he's my number 9 guy, and I have him drafted in round 6 or 7 or even possibly as a UDFA.
I had them in my honorable mentions, and he was slated in a similar place. I had similar notes to you as far as the potential to be a three down player. More adept in zone coverage than, you know, you don't want him kind of, you know, lined up on a running back or at a tight end, but just kind of somebody kind of roaming that middle of the field, and hopefully developing those understanding of route concepts at the next level, which like he'd be kind of a good teacher in Roquan. So, the guy wouldn't mind a late day three dart throw on. Put him on that list for me too.
All right, we're up to number eight. Who'd you have at number eight?
My number eight guy, I have Kobe King from Penn State. He kind of reminds me of a Malik Harrison. This as far as like a down, like true downhill thumper. As far as playing his best inside the box near the line of scrimmage, where he can kind of use his physicality to his best. And much like Harrison, as far as he can be taken advantage sometimes in coverage and missed tackles in space against more athletic, skilled players. But I like the way I like what he offers, brings to the table as a two down run defender and a special teams contributor. So he's a guy that I like as kind of filling in that Malik Harrison role.
Okay, very good. I have similar notes on him. He's on my honorable mention list. He's actually number 13 for me. And the coverage holes are the biggest. He had the worst yards per target among the draftable inside linebackers that I looked at 11.63 last year. So that's quite bad. 126.3 opposition passer rating was not quite the worst. But he allowed 349 passing yards. To give you an idea, the leader from a negative context, the guy who gave up the most yards among the Penn State defensive players was safety Jalen Reed. He's a guy who was off my list also, by the way, who only gave up 364. So, to have an inside linebacker basically leading you in passing yards allowed is pretty unusual. Penn State, a hell of a football team last year too. It wasn't like they had problems, they did have some injuries. The safety who went down, who should have been a number one pick if he hadn't been hurt. But that's it. Kevin Winston, right? Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. Anyway, Kobe King, I would have liked except for that. So that makes him really a two down thumper at the next level. And he's got all the size, all the speed you would really need for that role. Certainly at the mic and probably at the will as well at 468, he's going to be fine. I think they could draft him as high as the end of round five if they really loved him and they wanted his special teams, or they could take him as a UDFA or figure out a way to get a six or seven on him because they've got five picks in those two rounds. I think there's going to be some players where they actually make a decision in round six or seven on, do I want to avoid using up a large pool of my UDFA money on this player? So you got a seven and you think the guy's going to drop out of the draft, but he'll also be a guy who's prioritized by multiple teams. And you think there'll be a bidding war on him in terms of your very limited UDFA money pool. You may decide, let's just toss a six or a seven on him and not go through the aggravation of trying to win this guy over on those incredible UDFA Derby days. Have you ever gotten into some of the background of those, great stuff, by the way, because they got like literally 20 guys making calls to try and figure out who they can sign immediately after the draft is over.
Yeah, but the Ravens are among the best at finding those diamonds in the rough. So I know they have a strong reputation of like people who are who go undrafted because they know that a lot of times like agents will keep it real with people and then like they'll look at a team's track record knowing they're like, okay, if I go to this place, I'll actually have a shot. They have the streak up. They have a rich history of giving undrafted free agent guys a shot, whereas other teams here just be nothing but a camp body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that I think an inside linebacker this year is going to look like a really good opportunity to come to Ravens camp, given how thin they are at the position. Whereas if I were a tight end, I don't think I'd feel the same way at all about coming to Ravens camp unless they make a move. All right. So we're up to my number eight guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jay Higgins of Iowa is my guy. Now, I love him for the same reasons I didn't like Kobe King enough to put him in the top 10. So 6'0", 224, he's an undersized guy, runs a 4.82, turned 23 in February. We've already got a lot of knocks on him. He's a little bit older, a little bit slower, a little bit smaller. He has below average testing everywhere except for a 7.013 cone. He's had 45 college games over four seasons. Team captain, leads the defense. There's no doubt about that. Iowa, that's a really talented defense too that he's making the adjustments for. But here's what's great. Despite that speed, he had some of the best coverage metrics in the entire class. 5.50 yards per target is almost the best. A 57.2 opposition passer rating is the best. Four interceptions and one TD last year, and 5.39 yards per target career. So his career yards per target is even better than what it was last season, which kind of fits with that three cone. But also more than that, I think watching him fits with his understanding of what's going on between level two and level three and ability to adjust to it. So I really liked him for that. He's used much more frequently in coverage than as a pass rusher. Now, Iowa doesn't blitz linebackers all the time, but that is a team that really values linebackers who can cover, and Higgins has met that. I think what I'm seeing with Higgins is that he probably could rush the passer, and maybe he would at the NFL level if he played with the Ravens, but he's been kind of forced into a role at Iowa because he's their best coverage linebacker, kind of the way Roquan and Mosley have been with the Ravens in their various stints, that even though they certainly could provide value as a rusher, they've got another guy who's playing next to him who's so limited in terms of what they are able to do. And all apologies there to Darryl Smith, who was a good coverage guy, but you know, Mosley played with some other guys who were not nearly as good as Darryl Smith as well in coverage. Zach Gore was actually an okay coverage guy too, so that maybe I'm being a little unfair. But Higgins is a guy who has below average length at 31 inches, and stacking and shedding is going to be a problem. But he'll be his primary usage, I think, will be as a pro, will be as potentially a sub package third down guy, where I think he could be effective and also a special teams player.
Yeah, I had similar notes on him. He wasn't on my list, but he was a guy that I definitely looked at and praised him for his coverage ability. It's just some of those. Some of the shortcomings as far as athleticism kind of scared me away a little bit. But I shouldn't say scared me away, but like I do place a higher value on guys who offer more in coverage, just because that's so hard to teach at the next level. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, I had to make cuts somewhere, and he just didn't make the cut for me.
6'6", 7" or UDFA for me on Higgins as well at number 8. So we're still talking about players who are pretty far down into day 3 that I'd be keen on taking them. So I think we're up to your number 7 guy, and we might have had your number 6 guy, I think we said earlier, but now your number 7 guy, I don't think we said yet.
Yeah, my number 6 was Stutzman. So we're at my number 7, and he's a guy. I actually know a kid that played with him last year. So this is a guy, Teddy Buchanan from Cal. He's a guy. He's like one year starter at Cal. He played at UC Davis prior to that. So this is his first year at playing at the, you know, Power 5 level at the ACC level, and he's a guy that I was really impressed with just kind of watching him make plays all over the field. You know, he's a guy who has a bit of a more natural feel for coverage as well. So he didn't have any interceptions this past year, but prior to that, he had like 8 in like three or four seasons at UC Davis. So he's a guy plus I feel like possesses a nice blend of like ideal size at 6'2", and I think he's in around a 240 range, and he tested pretty well at the combine as well, with some explosive jumps, and he also I think has an upside on special teams and coverage as well. So he's a guy that could make an immediate impact for the Ravens in either phase of the game, as a sub package kind of coverage player or just, you know, primary special teams player. But for a guy who only has 1 year of FBS experience after transferring, I thought he played pretty well last year. And you guys, sometimes people are kind of weird of those 1 year starter guys, but sometimes all guys need is a shot, and I feel like he made the most of his last year.
I don't have an age on him. Do you happen to know his age?
I do not off the top of my head, but I can look it up for you.
He's played 5 years of college ball, one at Cal, and as you mentioned, 4 at UC Davis. Now, he's a player that there are a lot of context concerns for, because UC Davis, he's a great tackler, and he's an unbelievable coverage player. In fact, his last three seasons at UC Davis, his passer ratings against are 52.8, 32.4, and again, that's better than every pass incomplete, and 58.0. You mentioned the 8 interceptions in there. That's a big role in that. Only gave up 1 touchdown during that time, by the way, 8 interceptions. In fact, that's the only touchdown he gave up his whole career in the passing game. Last year, he rolled up to 10 missed tackles. It's still not bad at 9.2% missed tackle rate with 48 stops. A 4.8 to 1 relationship is good. But he's a guy that I actually did not look at in this thing. And I think that if I had, I'm not sure I wouldn't have put him into the top 10 as well. And I have to look at his physical limitations and look a little deeper into who he was. But certainly at 6'2", 235, he's the right size to play either inside linebacker spot and not be short as a thumper. And hopefully he's a guy who could maintain that great missed tackle rate he had throughout his career, most of which was accomplished at the FCS level.
Okay, I'm seeing ages far. I think it's like 22, 23. I think one side I saw said 22, but I think that was last year. So I mean, he might be 23 now.
Yeah, and more than likely as a five-year college player, he's a 23-year-old. He might be 24. But all right, well, terrific. That's it's a good choice. You've had some. We've had a lot of variation here. Let's put it that way. You had some good things, and part of that is that it's the class is kind of thin, and you know you're looking for characteristics, and I like that. I like him as a choice. I'll go to my number seven guy, and that's Cody Simon of Ohio State. Not a guy you've missed if you've been watching some college football because he's been in the playoffs and whatnot. And again, a guy who has some pluses and some minuses. He should go later. He's 6'2", 229, a little bit small, 450, 40. It's an other measurement, so it's a jaundiced eye on that. Played 5 years at Ohio State. I don't know his age. He's either 23 or 24, but I don't know his age. He has no other testing than that suspicious 40 and very short arms at 31.25 inches. That's probably 25th percentile or something. It's a low number for an inside linebacker. Coverage metrics are okay. They're not great. 7.6 yards per target and 106.2 passer rating against. Stops to missed tackle ratio is just okay, but his missed tackle ratio was up substantially from where it was in 22 and 23. So a possibility he could recover there. And hopefully with good coaching, you get a guy like this turned around. He has 1,861 college snaps, 827 of them are in coverage. So you look at his overall coverage body of work, it's significant. It's just not outstanding, you know. But it's not terrible either. And he's a guy who's certainly played on the biggest stage in some of the biggest games and not looked terrible doing it. He's an effective pass rusher. In 2024, he broke out. He had 7 sacks and just 87 pass rush snaps, so that's a good job. He also had 6 PDs in coverage, so that's a great combination, by the way. 6 PDs in coverage for an inside linebacker is fantastic. He did get picked on by Oregon with 93 yards allowed on 15 targets in that game, so they were literally isolating him to try and figure out how they can get the matchup they want against Cody Simon. I think I have a problem being him locked out too easily in level 2, and that's a length concern probably. So either the center or the guard is getting up to level 2, locking onto him, and then he's done for the rep when that occurs, as most inside linebackers are. But he'd be a platoon will. I think he would do the job in terms of coverage that the Ravens would want. It means you can free up Roquan, I hope, to do some additional pass rushing if he's in there. And he'd be certainly a special teams player. Might be an alternative to a dime back on third down would be one possibility given, you know, some of the success he's had as a pass defender.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I had similar notes on the guy. I didn't have him on my list, but he was definitely on one of those guys that I did watch him for preparation for this. But yeah, you're just kind of what you said is kind of rinse and repeat. It's solid potential, you know, 3-down contributor with a lot of high value on special teams as well.
All right, outstanding. So I think we'll cut it off here. We're going to have a lot of the same guys in the second half of the show, but Josh, tell us about where folks can find your work online and what your life is like living in Anchorage. We always talk about this, I know, but you're a lifelong boy there and living the dream.
Yeah. Life is good. No complaints from me. Me and my wife just welcomed, I told you before the show, we welcomed our two baby girls in September 1st. So I'm up to five kids now. Proud father of five up here at Anchorage, Alaska, holding it down. I work for Anchorage Daily News up here. It's the biggest newspaper up here in Alaska. And so all my Ravens content can be found online at Ravens on SI. That's a Sports Illustrated affiliate for covering the Ravens. So that's where you can find all my Ravens content year round. And you can always talk to me on Twitter, Josh Reed 907. Well, 907. I always say 907 because I'm from Alaska.
All right. And Josh, you will remember him many times from previous shows. He's a very regular contributor to the show. Really appreciate you, Josh, and always making time for it. Other folks out there, really want to get you to join us for draft night. And Josh, I don't know that I've talked to you about that, but I'm hoping you'll be back as a panelist as you've been in the past on draft night if you don't have other coverage responsibilities for.
No, I'd love to.
Yeah, for the ADN that day. But it is a great time sitting down with a group of people that only have one thing on their mind, and that is, how does this pick, how does this draft, how does this move, how does this trade affect the Baltimore Ravens? We don't care about a lot of other stuff that involves, how is Carson Palmer's cat doing and things like that. It's all about the ball here and all about the Ravens. We worked together on a spreadsheet that were you there for that last year for some portion of it?
No, I don't think that's a spreadsheet. No.
Okay. Anyway, that's a new thing. So we've been very happy with the results of that. It seems to be something people respond to as a visual aid to watching the draft, and you can listen to it after the fact. That I think a lot of it is the organic reaction to the show. So hopefully we have as many people at least to join it and really participate from whether you're as a panelist or whether you're just on the stream and you want to ask questions. We make sure we try and get to as many as possible. And you got a very engaged set of draft junkies that are they're watching the show together. So anyway, Josh, really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.